The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey there, Buffalo Bills fans. Welcome back. It's Bill Eve, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast here on BuffaloRumblings.com and everywhere else you go to get your fine podcasts. My name is John Boccacino, being joined by Jamie D'Amico for our ongoing series, State of the Buffalo Bills Roster. This week we have the enviable task, or should I say unenviable task, of studying the tight end position, a position that, unlike the running backs and the quarterbacks and the wide receivers of our previous podcasts, is sure to give consternation to a lot of Bills fans out there. Jamie, I got to be honest, I have not been looking forward to this podcast, if only for the reason that it's such a glum position to be breaking down, where, you know, Buffalo has been a black hole for tight ends basically since, Pete Metzelaars roamed the sidelines.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of forgettable names that have been in there. I mean, I feel like the best has been Jay Riemersma. But, you know, honestly, in order to get myself up for this, I did something that I almost never do. I went out to brunch this morning and I drank caffeine. I avoid caffeine like the plague because it does things to me that it shouldn't do to human beings. I won't sleep tomorrow night as a result of having the caffeine, but I knew I needed it in order to have enough energy to get through this conversation about Buffalo Bills tight ends.
We appreciate your dedication to the cause, getting caffeinated up. And really, Jamie, it's a daunting task trying to break down these tight ends because, you know, you mentioned Jay Riemersma, and he caught 53 passes in 2001. The Bills have not had, they've only had five tight ends catch 50 or more passes in a season, which is not a watershed number of receptions when you think about it being, you know, 16 games, you're roughly averaging three catches a game to get over 50. Charles Clay did it twice. Scott Chandler did it in 2013. Pete Metzelaars did that with a franchise record 68 catches in the 1994 season. And the aforementioned Jay Riemersma had 53 in 2001. This is
John.
Yeah.
How the hell did you pull Jay Riemersma stats so quickly?
I would like to say I'm a clairvoyant and a tight end psychic, but I have to give a lot of credit to the Sean Murphy of BuffaloRumblings.com. I've got an article up here that has his the stats for the state of the tight end position. And, you know, you put those all together, it's really sad, the state of the position, especially when you look at the postseason that Buffalo just had. They fell in the AFC Championship game to a buzzsaw known as Travis Kelce, who had 105 receptions for 1,400 yards and 11 touchdowns this past season. Now, obviously, not every tight end can even approach Travis Kelce's greatness, but he put forth games where he was catching eight passes or more in every playoff game and the last couple of regular season games. And here we are talking about a tight end trying to get to 50 or more catches. Now, here's where I want to start our conversation with, Jamie. It's not like these are Tom Brady's Patriots who relied on Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez as their primary pass catchers. The Bills have Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley and John Brown, at least for now, and Gabriel Davis as their primary pass catchers. But wouldn't it be a nice wrinkle to add to the offense if Brian Daboll could dial in consistency at the tight end position?
What you want is to have a tight end who's capable because they create matchup problems. They're too big for defensive backs to cover. They're too fast for linebackers to cover most of the time. So that opens up aspects of your offense that just can't be there otherwise. And yes, the Patriots had an unbelievable amount of success when they had Hernandez and Gronkowski playing on the field together because who could run with them? Who was it going to be? I mean, you had Hernandez, who was fast. You had Gronkowski, who was huge. And Gronk, he can still block. He can still do it. So, yes, that is something that this offense is lacking. And I was pleased to see that Brandon Bean mentioned that. And, you know, when we talk about the tight ends, I can tell you that it evokes a lot of emotion in me because, to me, the most frustrating player on the Buffalo Bills roster plays tight end.
And that would be, of course, Dawson Knox, who we will get to here in a second as the leading candidate, the leading incumbent in the tight end room. Jamie mentioned earlier Brandon Bean addressing this position. And during the offseason media sessions, here is what Brandon Bean had to say about the tight end position. "I thought it was up and down, to be honest with you," Bean said when asked to assess the tight end group. "It was never where the opposing defense was like, man, we've got to stop their tight ends from going off. So we'll look to that group. At the end of the day, we'd love to have a guy like what we just faced in Travis Kelce, but they don't come very often. We've got some guys here we want to continue to develop and see what happens. Obviously, if there's ways to add competition, whether that's free agency or the draft, we would do that as well." Now, listen, this is coming on the heels of Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce in two games against Buffalo had 18 receptions against the Bills. 18 for a 183 and 4 touchdowns. Mike Gesicki of the Miami Dolphins, 13 for 177 with a touchdown. Darren Waller, 9 catches for 88 yards. And Noah Fant had 8 catches for 68 and a touchdown. Those are examples of tight ends who, like you said, Jamie, are matchup nightmares. Linebackers struggle to contain them. Safeties can't keep up with them and the downfield schemes that they're running on their routes. It really is a unique wrinkle to give an offense having a tight end that can both block and run the field and run those crisp routes that you see with a Travis Kelce. The Bills did not get that at all with their tight end core. The quartet of Dawson Knox, Tyler Croft, Lee Smith, and Reggie Gilliam had 458 total yards and 42 receptions this year. If Travis Kelce plays one more game against the Buffalo Bills, he might eclipse the receiving yardage that group had all of last year.
Yeah, so it's worth noting that those are excellent tight ends. And also, the Bills in particular this past season seem to struggle with covering tight ends. Not an issue in the past, but there's a direct line between Matt Milano not being on the field for a good portion of the season and tight ends going off. So, you know, I do want to add that qualifier, but the spirit of what you said is dead on. If the Bills can have a large body who can also run, who is going to be able to cover that person in addition to the amazing receivers that the Bills are putting out there? Nobody. It would put so much of a strain on a defense that I think you would see an even more explosive Bills offense than you saw in 2020.
And that's why it would be an awesome move for the Bills to find a way to shore up this position. And look, again, like you said it too, Jamie, the Bills had such a potent passing attack this year. They were third in the league in passing yards and first downs achieved via the pass. They were third most passing touchdowns, and they were fourth in big play pass plays of 20 yards or more. All of this despite the inconsistent production from the tight ends. And it has to start when our breakdown of this position with Dawson Knox. Now, I want to give Dawson a little bit of credit in the fact that his season, I don't think we can fully judge the whole year of what Dawson Knox put forth, because he did have COVID and a foot injury starting off this year. Now, I'm not taking away anything from what he performed in the second half of the year, but his numbers are not overwhelming. 24 grabs, 288 yards, three touchdowns. He had 12 games and seven starts. And again, he missed those four games with both the foot injury and the COVID-19 diagnosis. Now, with Dawson being the number one tight end, break it down for us, Jamie. What do the Bills have in this second year tight end who's now entering his third season in Brian Daboll's offense?
They have an athletic freak who is an inconsistent blocker. When he's out there blocking, he makes some good contact and he plays to the whistle. And I love that about him. His tenacity is exactly what you want. And you see it on this Buffalo Bills team. These guys like playing until the whistle. John Feliciano is another one of those. His technique is not great when blocking. You see that he leans forward an awful lot, and that invites the defender to grab a hold of him and pull him forward to take him off of his blocking path. That's not the best. However, he's willing to do it. But we also see a guy who doesn't run very crisp routes. And here's the statistic about Dawson Knox that bothers me. He catches 55% of the balls that are targeted to him. That's bad. Half the time they throw to Dawson Knox, the ball lands on the ground. Not good, Bob, as you like to say.
Not good.
And the reason he drives me nuts is he has the potential, because he's so athletic, the way he can move. When he has the ball in his hands, he's fast, he's quick, he's strong. Look no farther than that play, not in 2020, but in 2019, when he ran over, what was it, two Cincinnati Bengals?
Yep.
Like, I'm watching that play and I'm like, oh, Dawson, don't do that to him. They've got families to feed. Oh, no. And at that point, I'm like, this guy could really come around. But, you know, it can be summed up very easily. Dawson Knox either catches a very simple pass out of the back, well, not out of the backfield, but usually as an outlet receiver, catches a simple pass and runs somebody over. Or he goes out into a route and there's a very good chance the ball bounces off of his hands. I hate that. But I don't think that we are looking at a guy that we can close the book on yet. It takes tight ends a while to develop. It is a difficult position to play in the NFL. This is a guy who was not in an offense that had is the offense in college, I believe he went to Ole Miss. They did not rely on the tight ends to go out into patterns. They were mostly blockers. This is new for him. So he really has only had NFL receiving coaching for 2 years. He's got to work on the eye-hand coordination. It's too soon to give up on him. He doesn't suck. He has the potential. He will be a very good number two receiver, assuming Buffalo can bring somebody else in.
I honestly, Jamie, feel like Dawson could be even a 1A, 1B type. If he's in a timeshare, I don't think he's the solution. I don't think he's going to be the guy who develops into, again, a Darren Waller, a Mike Gesicki, a Travis Kelce, in San Francisco, a George Kittle. He's never going to be that type of weapon. But what he does have is the height and the athleticism. I mean, how many times do you see... I almost want to take the counterpoint to yours, Jamie, where I think Dawson drops a lot of easier pass catches and will make the ridiculous, absurd leaping. There was a catch against the Denver Broncos where I thought he had no right in hell coming down with the ball, and he just jumps up and makes a jugular catch and comes down with it. And then there's the times where he struggles in the more mundane, the more routine plays. Between his athleticism, his length, and his physicality, those are the traditional, prototypical traits you want for a great tight end. And Dawson has those. And he's getting better in the run blocking game as well. But between the drops that plagued him his first season and the failure to catch the ball his second season, I don't know. It's really hard to think that the tight ends are in a good position. moving forward with Dawson Knox as their 1A. Now, here's the problem, though. And I want to say Dawson did also close the season with his best performances of the year. He had 6 catches for, I think 50 yards against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. He really came on during the playoffs, where I believe he had 4 or more grabs against both the Colts and the Ravens, and then that solid game against the Chiefs to close out the season. But the Bills need to see it more consistently from Dawson before they can move forward. The caveat for all of this, though, Jamie, and the reason I don't think the Bills are going to go out and make any major moves to supplant Knox at the top of the depth chart, unless they do it via the draft, is how tight they are against the salary cap. I just don't see the Bills, and we can talk about some of the positional upgrades that are out there, the Kyle Rudolphs, the Jonnu Smiths. You know, Hunter Henry's going to command Boku Bucks to bring him in from the Chargers. I just feel like with where Buffalo's offense is at and what they need to do with the rest of the holes on this team, getting a great tight end to supplant Knox is a luxury versus a must on the to-do list. And I don't think that's going to happen. I was reading a story from The Athletic where they were recommending ways to fix the tight end position. And it said acquiring a veteran receiving tight end for between $5 and $9 million annually. The Bills don't have that money unless they make drastic cuts and restructures to the current roster. I just don't think that's the way that Brandon Bean's going to want to go. And therefore, I'm thinking that Knox is going to stay with this. Obviously, he's going to be with the team. He has a cap hit of a little more than $1 million. It's his third year. If he can show the improvement continues with the blocking department and he can show development as a pass catcher, which I know are two big ifs, he almost needs to make the same kind of quantum leap forward that Josh Allen made from 2019 to 2020.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. He's the guy who, you know, I don't compare him to disappointing tight ends of the past. And the one that always leaps to mind is Lonnie Johnson back in the 90s, a guy who was athletic but could never put it together. We knew Dawson Knox was very raw coming out of college, and he was going to take some coaching. But, you know, it was his second season. Give him a chance. It's a difficult position to play in the NFL.
And he does have the benefit of having 2 more years on that rookie contract, as opposed to the next tight end on the depth chart, the one guy who is actually not guaranteed to be back next year, and that is Tyler Kroft, who signed a massive contract and has battled injuries almost his entire time in Buffalo. Outside of catching the game winner that clinched the playoff berth in 2019 over the Pittsburgh Steelers, Tyler Kroft has really not been able to, he's battled injuries, he's battled consistency problems. And I just, even though he had a good early start to the season, I felt like I don't see him re-signing with Buffalo because he just did not show enough to me during his 2020 season at a time when there was an opportunity with Knox missing those first 4 games. Kroft really, I know he had a good performance against the Rams in week 3, but can you really think of a time when he stepped up and had a solid performance? I mean, he was a healthy scratch after the bye week outside of 1 game. And that, why, if the Bills believe in what Tyler Kroft can do, why would they have him be a healthy scratch in every week but 1 down the stretch when they really needed a tight end to step up and compliment Dawson Knox? He only had 12 catches total in 10 games. I mean, that you can find that type of productivity with a 6th or a 7th round draft pick, much less spending what the Bills were going to spend on Tyler Kroft. I think it's been a very underwhelming and disappointing stint in Buffalo for the former Cincinnati Bengal.
I agree. And, you know, when Buffalo signed him, they signed him with the expectation that he was going to improve. But now he was a third stringer in Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati did have a couple of good players in front of him, but, you know, he didn't take that step forward that I think they believed he was going to. He is mediocre at everything. He's got a high floor, but a very low ceiling. I hate to use the term he is what he is, but he is a backup in the NFL who's not going to lose you games, but he's not going to win you anything either.
He does have, I will say to his credit, when the ball is thrown Kroft's way, he does come down with it. He caught 75% of the targets that were thrown his way last year. And if we do, I do want to give him credit again. He, were it not for his diving catch against the Los Angeles Rams in week 3, the Buffalo Bills would have blown a huge lead at home. And who knows where the team goes. I know it's only week 3, but to blow a 3+ touchdown lead at home, that could have been a demoralizing loss for the team moving forward. So kudos to Kroft for coming up with that big catch. But he had 2 of his 3 touchdowns in that game against the Rams and 1 other touchdown total in the final 9 games. You just can't bank on that type of productivity being anything that you can, you know, you want to see on your team in the offense. I mean, it's, you really, there's nothing that Tyler Kroft has shown me during his time in Buffalo to say that he's going to be back in 2021. I will say that I thought he had a lot of promise coming over from Cincinnati because he was that athletic type of tight end. He had great rave reviews. He seemed like somebody who had had injuries, but when healthy was able to produce. And yet here we are, same story, same old song and dance with Tyler Kroft. He just could not stay healthy and could not contribute.
He was a process guy. You know, they loved his personality. They loved the way he fit in with the team. But yeah, it's very clear how the Buffalo Bills felt about him because last offseason, they redid his contract to take away the 3rd year, which would have been the 2021 season. They removed a year from his deal because they were ready to move on from him.
That's a valid point, Jamie. And, you know, a lot of times teams talk about restructuring deals to save money now on the front end of the contract. But with Buffalo doing that, yeah, they basically, it was like, Kroft, you've got 1 year, 2020, to show us what you can do. And again, that's what makes it so disappointing. He had opportunities to really step up. And the fact that the team would rather have locker room leader Lee Smith be a part of this team. And I know that, you know, they love his leadership. They love what he brings to the table. Lee Smith, to me, was more of a valuable member of this Buffalo Bills team than Tyler Kroft, who, again, outside of the week 3 game against the Rams, did a whole bunch of nothing when it came to 2020.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a 2-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Lee Smith is an interesting case because he brings very little to the passing game, but the blocking he does, it's underrated. You don't really hear about blockers unless they're doing something wrong. And we know 2 seasons ago, he had major issues with attracting penalties and penalty flags. They were just, there was laundry all over the field every time he was on the field. But, you know, he got that squared away. And if you look at the film of Lee Smith, he is excellent at what he does, which is why he was active despite bringing nothing to the game as a receiver. The guy can lock up defensive ends, blitzers. He's great at the point of attack on running. He's a guy who I would prefer to keep than to not keep because he does a lot of the dirty work, but he's contemplating retirement. And how much would they miss him? I'm not even sure. You know, he's making about $2 million. You know, we could probably use that $2 million towards something that's a little bit more impactful than what he brings. Because also, you know, they brought him in and they always talk about the leadership. You mentioned it. But we're looking at a team now that is beginning to mature a little bit. And you don't need the same coach on the field types when you've got guys like Josh Allen and what's his name? The left tackle.
Deion Dawkins.
Why do I brain fart like that? Anyway, I digress. Those are young guys who are moving into leadership roles. So you don't need the old guys necessarily out there doing it. And, you know, I wouldn't miss him if he was gone, but I see the value in him and wouldn't be upset if he stayed.
Well, and here's the thing, Jamie, and again, everything we're doing this year with our offseason previews is predicated on the unusually tight salary cap, which should be around $182 million. I believe it hasn't even officially come out, this figure, but it's going to be somewhere around that low 180s. And the Bills, again, are very cash strapped with their salary situation. Even though it's a $2.25 million cap hit, the Bills could definitely use that money to look elsewhere with their needs that the team has up and down both offensive and defensive lines. But I will say, Lee Smith, to his credit, you're right. He cleaned up the penalties that were an issue in 2019, and he really was. His most valuable role was being a sixth offensive lineman out there. The penchant for blocking that he could bring to this offensive line unit was what he was supposed to be relied upon. And he did a really good job as a pass blocker. But I will say this, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I don't necessarily know how much better the Bills were in their run game on plays when Lee Smith was on the field as that sixth offensive lineman. And therein lies the problem. Do you keep a guy for $2.25 million who essentially is your blocker? He had four receptions for 35 yards and two touchdowns on six total targets in the 10 games that he played. Now, again, he's reliable. He can be a very solid blocker, but is that worth that type of money when you should be actually getting that production from your offensive line to serve as a key blocker and not just your tight end?
It's a difficult question to answer because there's a lot that plays into it. For $2.5 million, would you have somebody better at the position? And how much is continuity valued by this organization? I don't have the answer to that, but I think you raise an excellent question. And I think we're going to find out in short order what the organization thinks about that question.
Especially if he is mulling retirement. Like you mentioned earlier, the rumors and reports that Lee Smith might be deciding to hang up the cleats and walk away from football after, look, he's been in the league for more than a decade. He's done something well to be on these rosters and be, again, that locker room leader. That's a valuable role. But for a team like Buffalo, who has a lot of emerging leaders in that team, they might not need that as much anymore. Now,
so do you feel that when a person contemplates retirement that they have already retired? Or
I firmly believe that if you're thinking about it, you're retired, you know, which is why I'm surprised.
Okay, so Roethlisberger retired 5 years ago.
Yeah, essentially. And that's why I'm surprised that Drew Brees hasn't come out with his official retirement statement, because if you're thinking about it and you're doing the steps that he's been doing this offseason, retirement seems like it's an inevitability for that player. So I think Lee Smith is retired. I think he's played his last downs in Buffalo, just my humble opinion. Now, I was going to transition real quick to the last player I really want to there's two players we have left on the depth chart right, to talk about. We're not going to go into Nate Becker. He's Lee Smith light. He doesn't have a single offensive target as a weapon. He is just a blocker and that's it. But the Bills have Reggie Gilliam and Tommy Sweeney, who has been injured. Sweeney has missed almost, you know, he's been injured entirely during his Buffalo career. It seems like he did not play at all in 2019. He was placed on the reserve COVID list prior to week 7. So he is a great unknown, despite being in the same draft class as Dawson Knox. And then there's Reggie Gilliam, the fullback who was converted to tight end and was really a mainstay on the special teams unit. What do you make of those two pieces, Jamie?
Tommy Sweeney, to me, is another Tyler Kroft. He's probably going to be a backup type. And I really feel for the guy. You know, he ended up getting COVID and then has been suffering from myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart. I don't know if I mentioned it on the air, but I had COVID at the beginning of February, and it was no picnic for me. It hits everybody different, but I didn't develop a heart condition as a result of it. And here's a guy who is a professional athlete, and it did that kind of damage to his body. I hope he's going to be all right. But, you know, considering he was a late round draft pick, he was homegrown. He actually, in his rookie season, got on the field a bit because Dawson Knox was injured to start that season. I would like to see him out on the field and just see if he can develop into anything more than a backup. I don't think he will be, but, you know, that doesn't mean that he can't be a reliable teammate to have. Reggie Gilliam, he's a converted fullback. He's a little undersized for the position. To me, he's more of a special teamer, sort of H-back type. He can probably do a little bit of blocking. He can catch passes a little bit. But again, he's another low end of the roster type of player who I'm not convinced would stick around on the team long term. Can he develop? I mean, that remains to be seen. But I wouldn't bet on it. You know, I don't see either guy stepping into the role we have been wishing Dawson Knox could take on. And, you know, neither is going to be the answer for the number one tight end position, at least in the upcoming season.
I agree. These are all depth pieces. And I want to clarify that Nate Becker will definitely be on. He will have every chance to compete for that number two or three tight end spot after he signed a reserve future deal with Buffalo this past January, again, as a Lee Smith light blocking type of tight end. To me, Tommy Sweeney is a mystery. The Bills really liked him coming out of college, and they have not been able to assess what he is to this team, and that myocarditis is a scary condition. Hopefully he is able to make a full recovery. You're looking at, Jamie, next year, the Bills heading into the, if no other moves are made right now, the rest of the offseason depth chart is basically, you're looking at Dawson Knox with Sweeney and Becker and Gilliam, and then assuming that Kroft walks and Lee Smith retires, there's a lot of room for improvement on this team. And the Bills have been bantied about as one of the favorites to try to spend that cap space money on a tight end. And there's three in particular that have really been linked to them. And it starts with Kyle Rudolph and it starts with Jonnu Smith of the Tennessee Titans. What are you thinking about? Do you think the Bills will commit some resources? If anything, I would say I'd rather go Jonnu Smith. I think he has shown at least a decent upside at the tight end position. I think Kyle Rudolph is going to be too expensive for Buffalo. I think Hunter Henry is way too expensive for Buffalo's price tag this offseason. But a Jonnu Smith type guy could be somebody that could step in if the Bills can sign the former Titan. He's productive in the red zone. He's a really good route runner. He can stretch the seam and make those big plays over the top of the defense. And he does have a good run after the catch game. What do you think?
I like the guy. He shows a lot of potential in a Tennessee offense that is predicated on running the ball. And he had, what was it, 8 touchdowns this past season. So he's definitely, you know, he's hard to cover in the red zone and he's athletic. Now, you always have to be a little nervous about trying to project somebody's production. The Bills with Tyler Kroft, the Bills with Charles Clay, they projected and lost on those deals. Frankly, Kyle Rudolph is older. He's a decent all-around player, but he's not in his prime anymore. He's a solid blocker. He has good hands. He's not a guy who's going to be splitting the seam 20 yards downfield anymore. I honestly think because of the potential upside of Jonnu Smith that he will end up being more expensive than Kyle Rudolph. I think Rudolph wants more money than he's going to ultimately get. He seems to want out of Minnesota because they are now a run first offense. I actually think that the Bills' best bet is going to be to land him, but it's going to come down to if they get a tight end in the offseason, who's going to be the best value, because the Bills are just not going to be spending the kind of money we hope that they're going to spend this year because they're up against the cap. They're going to have to make a lot of moves to free up space, and they're going to have to be extremely judicious about where every single dollar goes.
And that's where you might see the team turn to the draft versus free agency to bring in a tight end help, because even though Jonnu Smith, I will say you're right, he had 8 touchdown catches this past season, but he had 5 of those in the first 4 games of the season with 221 total yards. His final 11 games, only 23 catches for 227 and 3 touchdowns, really becoming an afterthought in that high-flying Titans offense. He might think of himself more valuably than the market will, just based on, again, all these teams cutting back on how much they're willing to spend. Spotrac, I think, had a contract projection of $8 million annually for Jonnu Smith, which is a pretty healthy price tag for the tight end. We will see, but at least Buffalo Bills fans, I know this has been a depressing podcast when talking about the state of the tight ends, but I want to implore you to at least feel like there is some glimmer of hope with, again, the athletic and raw Dawson Knox, that he can hopefully make those adjustments, because I would much rather Buffalo develop Knox and draft somebody, or maybe find a bargain basement veteran to bring in, nowhere near, again, that $5 to $9 million that the Athletic is speculating, but find somebody who can be a veteran presence to help out with Dawson Knox and let Dawson grow. This is not a position the Bills need to spend a lot of money on, because there's so many other holes that Buffalo needs to shore up.
Let me throw a name at you. This would be, I think, somebody they would look at if Lee Smith stayed on the team. Dan Arnold from the Arizona Cardinals. Now, he's 6'6", only 220 pounds, but he's a tight end. He may be exactly the kind of receiving mismatch that the Bills are looking for. He has okay hands. He had 31 receptions this past year. He's not a starter. He could be the kind of guy who comes in and maybe catches the ball, runs away from some linebackers, catches it over the top of some defensive backs. You know, it could be intriguing. He averaged 14 yards a reception and actually had a long this season of 59 yards. Could be somebody who can run around a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good name out there, Jamie. 438 receiving yards, 4 touchdowns last year. He's a little bit rough in the blocking game, but he's definitely a matchup. Definitely. You know, you're 6'6", 220. You're a matchup nightmare as a tight end taking on linebackers or corners or safeties. And he probably would not command anywhere near the price tag that the Rudolphs, the Jonnu Smiths, and the Hunter Henrys would at this position. That's a great name to file away. The Cardinals might want to bring him back because I don't think they have anybody else under contract who's capable of producing at that level of Arnold, but he's a name to file away for sure. So good job on your part bringing up a great candidate.
Thank you very much. But yeah, like you said, the blocking is an issue. At 6'6", 220, he's awfully skinny to be able to, you know, anchor himself down against a linebacker or, God forbid, a, you know, 280-pound defensive end.
It is definitely, I think it's safe to say, Jamie, that the tight ends are the weakest positional unit that Buffalo has, especially on their offense. It's just really full of uncertainty and unfulfilled promise led by Dawson Knox. But again, take solace in the fact that the Bills aren't relying on their tight ends to lead the way, unlike the Patriots offenses of the Tom Brady Super Bowl eras, where they really rode their tight ends to victory. The Bills have a great offense around Josh Allen. It'd be great to get a complimentary tight end who could step in and give Buffalo even Charles Clay type productivity of 50 plus grabs. I don't think that's asking too much to find, whether in the draft or free agency.
No, I think 50 receptions in a prolific offense should be the floor. And let's just hope that they get somebody who does it consistently. That's all I want, is somebody who can play consistently, who can consistently get open, catch the ball, and deliver a block. They don't have to be spectacular at any of it. Just do it all with consistency, and I think you'll see the Bills take a step forward. And if Dawson Knox is the guy to do that, all the better.
What an unstoppable offense the Bills would have if they add that tight end weapon who can really be a consistent threat to this team. It would be the sky's the limit for Josh Allen and those Buffalo Bills. Well, folks, that'll do it here for our tight end recap, the state of the tight ends here on Believe a Buffalo Bills Fan podcast. If you had your Pepto-Bismol ready for this week's podcast, you're going to need a double dose next week. The uncertainties along the offensive line. Jamie and I will break down, boy, the comings, the goings, what Buffalo has and where they need to improve. There's a lot of holes to fill, especially with John Feliciano and Darrell Williams facing free agency, along with Ike Botker. A lot of question marks on the offensive line. We implore you to come back here to Believe a Buffalo Bills Fan podcast to find out our thoughts on the offensive line and more. In the meantime, get involved with us on social media. Jamie is at the Jamie D'Amico and I am at John Boccacino. We will see you back here next week for another edition of Believe.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.